Good morning, everybody. Had a good morning this morning, haven't we? I thought they sung really well. Ray and, was it Girls Too Loud? I can't think of you. I think I will. Yes, I'm regretting it already. Last week, we had 11 people who were baptised. A real blessing for them. In fact, we were talking this morning how much it's still a blessing for them. And it was a great blessing to us. There's nothing better than seeing people committing their lives like that. Each one gave a testimony on being saved. But we've got to remember that someone must have had to tell them the story of Jesus in order for them to be saved. Carmel will be celebrating 75 years of people hearing the gospel in this church and being saved. But again, someone must have had to tell them the salvation story for them to be saved. In life, with most things, there is a process and an outcome. And in our Christian lives, we're in charge of our own faith process. And God is in charge of the outcome. And to be honest, sometimes you don't quite understand why there's an outcome that there is, or the journey that we have to take to get there. But our faith in God will keep us strong and believing in him. So a good example of this is the story of Joseph, son of Jacob, who's also known as Israel, in the book of Genesis. So why is it a good example? Well, because Joseph had to believe his walk with God, the process, despite having to deal with unexpected and somewhat undeserving circumstances, but also to believe in God's outcomes. So in Genesis 37, verse 3, we read, "Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he'd been born to him in his old age, and he made an ornate robe for him." So we see how Joseph is favoured by his father, and that created some jealousy amongst his 10 stepbrothers. Now, anybody here who's the youngest child will know that you're with a favourite. I was the youngest child. I was definitely the favourite. So to exacerbate the situation, Joseph was given an ornate robe, making him stand out. His brothers would have just been wearing plain tunics. So everywhere they went, everybody knew who Joseph was and knew he was his father's favourite. But this wasn't Joseph's fault. I believe part of Israel's love of Joseph was that he could also see the Spirit of God in him, and this set him apart from his brothers. So at this point, Joseph must have been really enjoying his faith walk with God, the process, and God's outcome. So the story continues in Genesis 37, verse 5. Joseph had a dream. When he told his brothers, they hated him even more. So he's not winning many popularity contests with his brothers. But we see a reason for the enmity from his brothers, as Joseph, who was only 17 at this time, was telling him of his prophetic dream about his future life, and one day he'd be reigning over them. And it did come true, so it was of God. But at the time, didn't go too down well with his brothers. Joseph believed in God and his walk with him, which is the faith process, but he would be tested by the following outcome. So in Genesis 37, 28, we read of the brothers' revenge. "So when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled up Joseph out of the cistern or pit and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt." Now, although in reality Joseph was sold into slavery, his brothers came up with a bit of a different idea, and they told their father Israel that Joseph had died, and they produced his ornate robe with blood on it, which was actually goat's blood, but his father didn't know that, and he believed them, and he grieved. Now, at this point, Joseph could easily have given up his faith, but as we found on many occasions in our Christian life, it's at times like this, when our faith is tested, that we show our resilience and continued belief in God. Now, there's a famous poem, many of you know, but it's worth repeating, called Footprints in the Sand, which essentially describes a person who questions God. But when things were going okay, there were two sets of footprints in the sand. When things started going a bit difficult, there was only one set of footprints. And they said to God, "Why did you leave me on my own?" And God said, "The reason there's only one set of footprints was because that's when I carried you." And at some point in our Christian lives, no doubt, we've all been carried. So let's continue with Joseph's story. Get near the end now. In Genesis 39, verse 1, it says, Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. So the Lord was with Joseph. Under Potiphar, he became a successful man, and once again, he was reveling in God's blessing as a reward for his continued faith in him. But disaster was soon to follow. Potiphar's wife took a liking to Joseph, but he refused her advances. She lied about Joseph to her husband, and he ended up being put in prison for 2 years. Now, to be honest, at this point, I've got to say, I'd be thinking, I can't take any more of this. Up, down, up, prison for 2 years. I'm not too sure I could have survived that. But Joseph was a man of faith. He believed God's promises given to him as a young man through his dreams. Again, it shows our Christian walk won't always be easy, but it will be ultimately rewarding, as we find out in the last part of Joseph's story. Genesis 41, verses 38-39, it says, Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find a man like this, in whom is the Spirit of God?" Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you are." So here we see how a young man's dream turns into reality. He's rescued from prison by the Pharaoh, and he's made ruler over the land of Egypt. So how does this story relate to us today? A guy I know very well has allowed me to tell his testimony, because I believe when you hear what he's got to say, it'll be very relevant to what we're talking about today. So when I say I, it's this guy, it's not me. So, a couple of schoolmates were chatting away. One of them was a Christian, and he was telling his other schoolmate about Jesus and about being a Christian. So this is where his testimony starts. So it was a Sunday night, and it was nearly 6:30, and there was a knock on the door. I went to the door, and my schoolmate was there. "Hey, are you okay?" "Yeah, fine." "I remember I was telling you about Jesus?" He said, "Oh, yeah." I said, "Well, the gospel service starts in a bit. Do you want to come and listen? I think you really enjoy it." "Mate," I said, "Planet of the Apes is on." He said, "It's my favourite programme. I wouldn't want to miss that." "Okay," his school friend said. "Never mind. Thanks for that." And off he went. A week went by. 6:30, Sunday. "Hiya, it's me again. Gospel service is on. I really do think you'll enjoy it. Do you fancy coming?" "Mate, Planet of the Apes is still on." He said, "I don't want to miss it. It's getting really exciting." "Okay," his friend said. Went off to church. About 3 or 4 weeks later, knock on the door. I opened it. It's my mate from school. "Planet of the Apes finished last week. Are you coming to church? You're going to really love this gospel service." At this point, I was 15 years old. It was 1974. I went along to the gospel service. I heard the word preached, and I gave my life to Christ. That young man went on to serve God for the next 50 years nearly. He's called Steve Dixon. It's Beryl's son. He went out to Spain. He's back in London. He was pastor there. He went out to Australia. And he's now back in London again. And he's given his life to God in God's service. The process was about the schoolboy having the courage to tell him. The outcome was what God wanted. God wanted this man in his service. Now, I was hoping a young man would be here this morning, but unfortunately he's not been able to make it. I'll tell you his story, and it's a double story. I think you'll like this one. So Phil, he liked going to football. He liked having a drink. He liked having a bit of a fight when he went to football back in the 70s in the day. And he was very sort of on the fringe of getting into trouble with the police. And he did this for a few years. And one day he thought, I don't know how I'm going to carry on doing this. He had friends who were getting stabbed. He had friends who were being put in prison. And lucky for him, but we know it wasn't luck, his auntie and uncle came over from Australia. And they were Christians. And whilst they were here, they came to Carmel for a couple of meetings. And they sat Phil down one night. They said, Phil, come on. You're either going to end up dead or you're going to end up in prison. And we really don't want that for you. Why don't you come along to Carmel? He came along on the Sunday night. He heard the gospel being preached and he gave his life to Christ. Now, for a guy to come out of what he was doing to give his life for Christ is a bit of a move, isn't it? It really is a sort of a completely different lifestyle, etc. And why am I telling you about Phil? Because Phil played a major role, because the process that he was in, that he was telling people about Jesus and God's outcome, I'm going to fill up. So he told one of his mates who was also involved in going to football matches, etc. And he was also getting a bit concerned about that lifestyle, and who decided maybe I'll just go abroad for a bit. It was a good way of getting out of it. And Phil told him about Jesus, and his mate came along on a Sunday night. He listened to the gospel and he got saved. Again, Phil's process, God's outcome. That man was Jed Kelly. Probably the best Bible teacher we've had in this church. And because of Phil's faith, and because of Phil's ability to overcome the difficulty of talking to what was a difficult group of people, we've been blessed over the years to have Jed's teaching and preaching. But also, we've got to think of 75 years in this church and the people that have passed through, and we have to honour them for their service. So we think of Ian and Sue Watson. We think of Bob and Joy Grahamslaw and Bob's sister Ruth. We think of Alan and Beverly Molyneux, Phil and Margaret Brayshaw, Steve and Joyce Dixon. We think of Paul and Lou Moores, Lois Jenkinson over in Australia, and our very own Jed Kelly, Linda Thomas, Sue Brough, Andy Moores and Bev Moores, who have all at some point in their lives gone out into God's service. But they couldn't have done this unless somebody had taken the time to tell them about Jesus. Bit of a lighter story now. Oh, I'm getting old. Whoa. Oh, you'll like this one. So, I was 14. I was doing a maths test. Mr. Deaver was our maths teacher. And I was pretty good at maths. I was in the third year. And I managed to get 129 out of 132. And the first question I know Jed's going to answer is, well, what did you lose on three for? Because we're like that, aren't we? You know, you can get 19 out of 20 in a quiz, and all you worry about is the one you got wrong. Mr. Deaver was It was very sensitive. Brown, he said, because they were like that, very friendly at our school. Brown, he said, you actually got them all right. He said, but in one of them, you didn't show you working out. He said, so I had to take marks off you. And I thought, gives him something to aim for next time. Following day, he comes in and he said these words. Brown, yes, sir. The headmaster wants to see you. Now, the quiet in the classroom was like, he's got to go and see the headmaster. Oh. And I'm sure looking around at a few of these faces, I think you lot have seen a headmaster or a headmistress in your time. I wasn't worried. I had no reason to be. I just felt confident. I went to the headmaster's office. He sat me down. Brown, he said, because he was very sensitive as well. Hello. Are you having a walk? What? You having a tour? Oh, you're coming up here with me? Probably preach better than I will. No. Brown, he said, sat me down. He said, I just want to thank you for the result that you got in the maths test. I know you would have worked hard. And I know you over time, you've really put the effort in. And so this is a good reward for what you've done. Why have I told you that story? In my opinion, the greatest ever songwriter wrote these words. We shall all be called as witnesses, each and every one, to stand before the eyes of God and to speak of what was done. He was paraphrasing the words of 2 Corinthians 5, verse 10. Which is on the other side of here, hopefully. Oh, why is this, sir? For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each may receive what is due for what he has done in the body, whether good or bad. So our headmaster in the sky is waiting to congratulate us for what we've done. Our salvation is secure. But what we need to be doing is telling other people about him. We're living the best life. We are living the best life. Bob Grahamslaw was here this week and I was chatting with him. And he's in his 70s now and he just said, I cannot imagine having a better life than the one I've had with Jesus. So it'll be a time of rejoicing for all of us, like Joseph, who, when meeting a variety of people, he continued to tell them about God, who overcame difficulties in their Christian walk and who kept the faith. I just want you to have a quick look round and have a look at the empty chairs that we've got here. 75 years coming up, and I can remember when I first come, we faced that way. Chairs were there, and you had people stood at the back because there was that many people who believed in God. And there was that many people because somebody had taken the time to tell them about Jesus. So what I'd like you to do now, if you feel uncomfortable, I'd just like you to close your eyes. And if you could maybe think of somebody who could fill those chairs, it could be a member of your family, it could be a friend, it could be one of your neighbours. And if Jesus was here now and talking to you, what words do you think he'd use to get you to tell them? There's this song I'm going to play for you. I ask you to listen to the words. And I think this is maybe what was in Jesus' heart and what he would be telling us. I want to thank you this morning, Father, for your word. We thank you for the challenge that's in our lives to pray, to praise, to read your word, but also to tell them about your love, about the gift of your salvation. And we just pray this morning, Lord, as you put people in our hearts and in our minds, that we can fill these empty chairs. Lord, that you will give us the courage and the strength to speak to these people, that we can share what we know with you, and that we can bring them into the kingdom. We ask it in your name. And all God's people said.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you.